Hello everyone, it's Chris Hall here from Charity Digital, the organisation that helps other charities be more digital. Today we have a special podcast for you. In March, we had over 400 charity professionals join us at Olympia London for a day of learning, knowledge sharing and connecting. We managed to record all of the 22 sessions from the day, and we'll be releasing them as bonus podcasts throughout the series to help share some of the amazing conversations we were having on the day. If you want to keep up to date with all our upcoming podcasts and events, like and subscribe the podcast through your usual podcast provider and sign up for Charity Digital updates at charitydigital.org.uk. Enjoy the pod.
Hello and welcome everybody to our digital strategy panel, where we're going to be exploring quite a number of the different aspects of how you develop and implement a digital strategy. Those of you who are more alert will spot that we've got a slight change to the panel today. Unfortunately, Mitesh had a family illness that had to pull out. So I'm really very grateful to Pauline Roche, who has stood in at about an hour's notice, which is a big ask, but thank you very much for her to for stepping up to that. I'll introduce each of our panelists in turn. I've got some pre-prepared questions and then we shall open up to the floor as well. So starting with Pauline, as I'm on the subject. Pauline is a producer, broker and journalist. So I guess that makes you a polymath, doesn't it? She runs the NetSquared group in the Midlands. So those of you who don't know, NetSquared are local groups that meet up to discuss digital topics, typically in an evening. She's a trustee of the Small Charities Coalition as well, so I'm really pleased that she'll be able to bring in that small charity perspective to digital strategy, in addition to our other two panellists. Introducing the next, we have Caroline Rennie. Caroline is product lead at Comic Relief, a role she's been doing since 2016. And what she does is she develops digital products which support fundraising and the wider organisational needs. And her approach is to focus very much on utilising commodity technology, only building bespoke when it's really absolutely necessary. And this approach has resulted in some really significant cost savings for Comic Relief. So we'll get a chance to explore that a little bit more in the panel as well. And then last but by no means least, we have Lara Burns. Lara is now with the Scouts, but has actually had two very significant digital roles before that, over 10 years within the sector overall. Currently, she's leading the Scouts Digital Transformation Programme, enabling the Scouts to become digital first and deliver its Skills for Life strategy. One of the interesting things about the Scouts, I think, is that it's a network charity. So each group in its own right is a small charity, typically with income maybe in the range of £5,000 up to £40,000 for a very large one. And they're volunteer-led and run. Prior to that, she was at Age UK, where she championed the digital strategy. And before that, with the Horticultural Society. So welcome very much to all three of our panellists. Lara, I'm going to start with you. So you've had three big digital roles in the charity sector. What would you say is the most important part of developing a digital strategy?
Oh, okay. So I would say three things, really. First of all, start with a really clear vision. Now, that might actually just be one slide, one PowerPoint, but it's something that you can keep repeating over and over again so people really get that fixed in their head. Related to that, I've always had what I call digital principles, sort of along the lines of Amazon, GDS. And some of that is about not only reminding people of what you're doing, but how you're doing it. So that's really important. One of mine is digital as a state of mind. And then the second two really relate to the fact that I don't think it's really about the tech, it's about the people. So you've got to have the leadership team and you've got to get them bought into what you're doing. We've already heard that a lot in the opening session. Yes. And related to that is, you know, it's about your team. because you can't do it on your own. Now, whether you're a small charity, and it is, maybe you're the team, or maybe you've only got one or two people, or in big charities, you know, maybe you've got hundreds, you absolutely need people with the skills and most of all the energy and the motivation to help you push forward that strategy.
Good. And Caroline, I was really struck by the savings that you've achieved with Comic Relief. Can you explain how the use of commodity tech fits into your overall digital strategy?
Yeah, sure. So sort of a bit buzzwordy, but like commodity tech, software as a service, and sort of choosing when to buy and when to build. So what we do is we identify what are our unique business problems. So for Comic Relief, for example, we have to cater for broadcast moments. So our website needs to be able to deal with if every single person watching on ITV wants to donate at exactly the same second, we need to be able to deal with that. And historically, we would do that by going, okay, like bring a bazooka in, we're going to have all the servers and we're ready for that to happen. But actually, that's a very expensive thing to do. So what we've done is making use of commodity of serverless technology means that we can only pay for what we use. So AWS serverless tech, they are fantastic tech partners as well, just as a little shout out to them. That means that we only pay for every time, like if you go onto our website, we pay like minuscule bits of a penny for that individual use case. And that meant that we had a 93% saving on our costs compared to 2015 to 2019. And so we're just moving more and more of our tech stack into the pay-as-you-go model. I think part of the, there is a bit of a challenge, I think, sometimes with people who go, I'd rather budget and know I'm spending 10 grand than have a risk of a pay-as-you-go model where I might spend 11, but you also might only spend one. So it's a balancing act with pay-as-you-go, but I think, especially for our model where we're very spiky, it makes perfect sense for us.
Yeah. And Pauline, you do a lot of work with smaller charities. So how is producing a digital strategy for a small charity different?
I think, as Kirsten said in the first session on here, you know, you start small and try and do something that's necessary. You know, the small charities that I'm dealing with are usually firefighting. They're dealing with crises every single day, so they're getting, you know, beneficiaries coming in with, you know, two plastic bags full of receipts that they need to have processed, and they're struggling. And the small charities, they don't have the income that bigger charities have. They don't have the skills in the staffing team, and they don't have the time to kind of have the longer term view of developing something. So you start with something that will make a difference to them straight away. An example that was quoted earlier was a digital calendar. You know, using the tools that are free or free-ish. Like the G Suite, you know, to kind of get people to do things that save time. So productivity tools, I think, are a great way of starting to explain to smaller charities that using them will make a big difference to them.
Yeah. So it's a concept of start with baby steps and then hopefully
very
build
much
from there, which really plays to our whole Be More Digital agenda. Mm.
Can I just add to that? I think the other thing also that I would say is it's about being user-focused, obviously. So it's about what can make the biggest difference in a really small way to your users. So that might just be about, redesigning a form on your web page where people can fill in to get some more advice. So, you know, it's really often really cheap and quick to do, but can actually make a massive difference to your end users. Mm. And I think once you start building that in and then can show to other people in the charity, look, we did this really small thing and we're being more digital. And that's what it's all about is, as you said, step by step.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think one of the other interesting things here, I guess, is starting with the small steps. And also we talk a lot about experimentation as well. And one of the challenges I feel in the sector is how do we balance these? So how do we not get just caught down into the cornflakes of the experiments and the steps? What thoughts do you have on that, Lara?
Yeah, I think it's really hard. And I think especially if you've got a team that's digital experts, they can quite often get quite excited and kind of run away on doing the cool stuff. I mean, the way I've done it is either I've got funding, so we got funding at Age UK from CAST, the Centre for Accelerating Social Technology, which enabled us to do a sort of pilot project separately from our main stuff, but then we managed to bring it back in. We've also done things like we've worked with corporates to do hackathons or get pro bono work. So often that's quite a good way of not expending your own resource, but to get something where you can trial something out and do it on the side. But I think it's really important to remember, don't keep doing things on the side and thinking about how you can bring them back into your core strategy.
I'm really keen on hacks as well. I mean, I've got a t-shirt, Hack the Midlands. I regularly go to hacks and sprints because you get to meet other people who maybe aren't in your organisation but who have a desire to you know, make a difference and can give you expertise that you wouldn't be able to tap into otherwise. And for the people with the tech expertise, they get a chance to help, you know, something small, do something quick in their locality that can make them feel really good. We had a hack last year or the year before around mental health, and one big firm, Fuji, sent three of their developers to the hack, and within a day they developed a chatbot that was to help people with mental health problems. If they were new to an area, they could search on their phone, speak to the chatbot, and find the local services. I mean, that's kind of very simplistic view of something, but something can be done, something, you know, quick and dirty, as they say, that can be of interest. And it spikes people's enthusiasm as well. And, you know, what you want is to get some of that enthusiasm and harness that then in the right way. You don't want trustees and senior management running off to say, you know, we need a shiny app. They don't need a shiny app. They need something that's there already that somebody can help them work the way through. Too many small organisations, again, have invested in something they didn't need. You know, I've been in organisations where they had Microsoft Dynamics. It was a tiny organisation. They don't need a big CRM like that. Mm. They need a Zendesk or something simple that they can manage with a very small budget and not too much skills. A website, they don't have to pay a fortune to update every time they need a new page. You know, WordPress. Mm. There are great tools out there that are really helpful.
And I think something which some organisations can fall into the trap of is the concept of like, well, I've got my digital agency and they are servicing like our needs really well. And I know that we're in a position of being quite lucky because we've got an internal team, but it really isn't, you know, Wix websites, like you don't need to be that digitally savvy to be able to use a drag and drop. But I think there's a bit like you were saying around consultancies, there's people being like, oh, the behind the curtain's very difficult. It's like, actually, it's all really easy, guys. It's all solved problems. So if you can get the tools which are software as a service, which are being, you know, delivered for you, often, you know, never be someone's biggest customer as a charity, because then you're paying all of their wages, right? So go for larger organisations where they're likely to give you higher discounts. There's little hacks like that. Like we fell into a big trap with, well, not a trap. We were with a grants management platform, which was quite a big investment for us, and we realised that we were their biggest customer. And that means that they're making all of their product decisions based on sort of what Comic Relief's weird edge cases are. So then 5 years down the line, you look at it and you're like, what is this monster we've made? Whereas if you're in a sort of, if they're focused on that product and that product being scalable and usable across multiple use cases, you're much more likely to have a better system for you if it works for someone else, and then you're not having to continually invest to improve it.
Let's go into the, I guess, one of the key questions, which is actually in the title of this, and Kirsten actually touched on it very nicely in the plenary as well. And maybe start with you, Pauline, on this one. How much digital should there actually be in a charity strategy?
I think if you're starting with digital, you're starting at the wrong end. You know, basically digital is a way of doing things. It's not a thing in itself. We don't talk about having electricity strategies or, you know, closing the office strategies. It's kind of how we do things. And digital offers us opportunities to do what we do, hopefully better, more efficiently, faster, so that we can then do the face-to-face. Certainly with small charities, people come to small charities, they want to talk to somebody. They want their hand held. They want a voice, you know, not a chatbot, unless you can make it really sound really like a human. But you know, digital is the way of doing things, not an end in itself. So start from the organization's strategy, and then look at how can digital help us do the work that we do in a better way.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I would say, certainly based on my experience, that if you don't call out digital as a core part of your organisational strategy and don't bury it, otherwise it doesn't happen. So I've found that where, you know, it's not really a core part of a strategy, it's not a core part of a governance, it's not a core part of the leadership and the way that they make decisions, digital gets pushed down the agenda. In board meetings, it gets pushed down the agenda in terms of budget. It becomes a bit of an afterthought. Mm. So for me, it absolutely is not the be-all and end-all, but if it is not right up there as a headline, it gets forgotten about, and I think that's really critical.
Well, I think that's where your digital trustees come in, and they're the people who should be saying, hang on a minute, you know, have we thought about doing it this way? Because they keep themselves up to speed with what's going on out there, like by reading Charity Digital News, by reading the newsletter that I publish. You know, there's plenty of good information flow. They need to be on top of that flow and be, you know, siphoning it off for the good of the organisation.
Yeah, we have two digital trustees, and so that's on a board of about 10 or 12 trustees in total. And it's just really changed the dynamic, because it means that we can have, you know, when we're making a decision on, we actually are like replacing that horrible monolith I talked about earlier with a Salesforce option, and one of our digital trustees was like, what are you doing? Why are you buying a monolith? And we said, no, we're not. So we it was nice to have that challenge, but we got to say, you know, we're actually looking at it as Salesforce will be part of our ecosystem. It will not be our ecosystem. But having someone who can understand how we would approach it and how we would then have other things pull into it, rather than someone going, how much does it cost? Yes or no, which is potentially what sort of more of our treasurer might be more on the what's the cost, tick, no tick. Mm-hmm. But when we have someone who can actually really buy into why are you doing that, what's your approach, and people who understand that digital investment, you can't say, well, we spent £500,000 now, so we fixed digital. It's like, well, in 3 years' time, that £500,000 investment will probably be a redundant system, and that's something that you need to take into account. So maybe it's not worth that £500,000. Maybe you need to do that more light touch and interconnected stuff. So yeah, having trustees who get it has really transformed how we can like behave within the organisation.
So trustees are one important aspect of the governance. But I guess if we try and expand that topic and say, you know, what is the right governance and leadership structure overall for a digital initiative, what do we think?
I think it really depends on the organisation that you're in, to be honest. Trustees, absolutely essential. One of the things that I did at Age UK was create a digital advisory board, which was separate from trustees. I found it very difficult to change the trustees for all sorts of reasons. So I got some digital advisors. So they're great volunteers. They talk to the CEO directly, really influenced our strategy. You know, that annoying thing where often they say things that you've been trying to say all along and suddenly the CEO hears what they're saying. I don't care who says it.
They're an expert then,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Great, I'll take that win. So that really, really worked for me. But also maybe thinking about how you have what we called a digital tribe throughout the organisation. So it's sort of digital advocates who might not be the digital people, but just scattered through the organisation, where you can start really pushing out what you're trying to do. That's a really good way of doing things as well.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Good. So one area of digital strategy that maybe doesn't always get considered overtly enough is also resourcing. Mm-hmm. I think nearly all charities report that it's hard to find the resources they need with the right digital skills. Maybe start with you, Caroline. What are your thoughts on what is the best way to set about the resourcing part of your strategy?
So we have, within our organisation, we have the Digital and Innovation Directorate, which in itself, like, sort of in our three-year, like, game plan, it would be try and make our entire directorate sort of redundant and needing to be a silo, but being more embedded is the end goal. But we make up about 15% of the entire organisation. which I can't tell if that's, I don't know what like the norm would be, but something which we know is that we're never going to get to 100% of the organization being these digitally, like, you know, so we've got engineers, data engineers, product people, designers within our skill set, but we don't, what we don't want to do is have, you know, our investment team who do the, you know, grant making, they don't necessarily need to be digital people, but they need to be digitally empowered. And that's where like upskilling the 85% rather than increasing the 15% is actually sort of our direction of travel. Because, yeah, people with these skill sets are expensive. And to get the, especially the sort of, there's only so much that you can say, but you're working for a charity, so you feel good. And they go, yeah, but it's like treble the salary over there. Mm. So that's, we really struggle with engineering in particular to get in talent who really get the cause. But that's where it's like you can upskill someone for much cheaper than you can buy in skills. And then what we struggle with a little bit is upskilling people, and then they've got some really, really valuable skills.
And then they go.
But that's where you need to keep them engaged with really interesting work. So.
Yeah, we've had, I mean, obviously in the charity sector, I think that's, everyone faces that. You know, we've really struggled with recruitment. Really, it is really, really hard. I mean, another thing that we're trying, and again, it depends on your organisation, but we've got 165,000 volunteers who are scouting leaders. Mm. So we've created a community of interest where people who are professionals in their day job. So for instance, they might not, we haven't got to the stage where they're actually coding for us. That's a bit too scary at the moment. We will get there. But they're doing user testing, for instance, but not just doing the testing. They're actually running the user testing for us because some of them are UX experts. Yeah. Mm. So again, it's a really great way of broadening out what you're doing by using people who are already passionate about your movement but can give a little bit of extra time. That works really, really well.
And all the kids know how to do it anyway, so just get the scouts on it.
Yep.
So kind of moving along with the scouts, I am interested in how you, well, what the specific challenges are for a federated structure and a federated structure of volunteers, yeah, where you actually have very little leverage over them at all. You can't fire them, they're volunteers. So you have to take them with you some other way. How do you do that?
Yeah, I don't know yet. Maybe you can give me the answer. I'm only 5 months in. We did have something fairly similar at Age UK. It is a massive challenge. I'm not sure, but I think we're probably one of the biggest volunteer in terms of numbers of volunteers in the country. And obviously, we've got to recognise that some of those people are really skilled in their day jobs, but some of them have absolutely no interest in technology. I went along to a group actually where the scout leader came up and she just said, I'm not interested in technology. okay. she then did tell me that she used the website and used email regularly. So she obviously did use tech, but you know, it's not core. Yeah. And you know, scouts have been around for 100 years and quite successful, obviously, without tech. It's about getting kids out there and doing stuff potentially without tech. So it's a really interesting conundrum. But part of what we're trying to develop is almost develop personas of what digital skills you might need as a scout leader. Yeah. But also, again, our whole strategy is skills for life. Mm. So that might be, it's not just about skills for life for kids. It's also skills for life for those leaders, so that we might be able to help them with other parts of their life if we get them to upskill a bit in digital. But it's an ongoing thing. Yeah. I haven't cracked it yet.
I think people probably have more digital skills than they give themselves credit for at times.
No,
if you look at the government's essential digital skills framework, it's very useful even for ourselves to go through it and tick off what we can and can't do, most of the things we can do. And I think it maybe can give people confidence in going on to the next step, because as we say, digital and tech can seem very scary, or you know, people have felt fearful of it, and data. So you know, if we can build some people's confidence, even in a small way, I think that all helps.
Yeah, we're using that framework actually to help develop our own, obviously maybe putting some of our own language around it to actually then push out to scout leaders to say, where are you on this scale, and this is what you could do next.
I've used that as helpful. I've used that at an own conference locally where people can take off, and yeah, you can see they're going, oh, I can do this, oh, and that's digital. You know, it's what do we call digital, what do they call digital? might not be the same thing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to open to the floor in a second, and you'll be able to come to the mic or use the app. If you want to use the app, you hit the button which says post about this session. It's got a little piece of paper and a pen icon. The question I want to ask before we go to the floor, I think maybe this is one for you, Caroline. What's the role of data in setting the digital strategy?
So I think data needs to be central to all strategies, because how do you make decisions if you don't know facts? And I think people also get a bit caught up with the idea that data doesn't mean how many people are on your email subscription list. Data, that is a data point, but you know, data is your financial data. Data is stuff which is not owned by you. So to give an example of like how Comic Relief currently really changing how we use data is making it much more like surfaceable, easy to access. And so your digital strategy in regards to data should probably be, how can you get the relevant data points into the hands of decision makers in a digestible way? So we've just brought in Tableau, which is a great visualization tool. And it means that we can do things now like take the Barb report, which is the viewing figures, overlay that onto our donation figures and go, here's your conversion rate of the one show from last week. Or like, and so being able to have recognize that data is not just your own data, but data from across, you know, whatever's accessible to you, and being able to have data literate people able to create that into, also I've been told off for using that phrase, everyone's data literate, but there's a scale, right? So it's how can you get people to understand the data they're being given to make the right decisions? And that can be across your entire organization. So we've got a great transparency lead in our impact and investment team who's using Tableau. They're not in digital innovation, but they're able to use this tool to do things where you can overlay the migration routes over our funding, and where are we funding in refugee movement? We're able to go, are we funding the busiest routes? Are our funding strategies, is the amount that we're giving out within line of our actual grant making strategy? So are we doing longer, bigger grants? And so actually having that in real time, rather than it being seen as I do an action and then report comes 2 months down the line. You can, making data more real time is an absolute game changer for an organization.
Mm-hmm. Good. Right, let's open up to the floor. So as well as being able to post questions through the app, we have a microphone there. And there's also a microphone just behind the little metal bar, halfway down. If you're not able to come to the microphone, we can get, should be a volunteer in here who can bring it to
shout.
You. No, we need to use the microphones because of the...
of course, yes.
For the subtitling.
How have you helped your organisations understand the difference between IT and digital?
Who'd like to take that one?
Well, I've had two roles now where I started off as a digital person and then ended up taking over the IT team effectively as well. I think it's actually critical that they're not different. I mean, I actually try to just use the word technology. I actually hate the word IT because it has such awful connotations. Everyone slags IT off, frankly. And digital, I find digital, sometimes people sort of use it in a bit of an exclusive way. We're digital, but you're IT or you're tech. And to me, it's all kind of one and the same thing. So I think actually just bringing it together, my team is the technology transformation team, digital transformation team. I don't really care what people call us, but for me, it's absolutely all part of one thing. And having the traditional IT, the infrastructure, the service desk, making things work is just as important as some of the whizzy new web-facing front-end stuff. But I think bringing them together and making everyone feel part of the same team and giving the IT people the principles of being user-focused, for instance, is actually really important. But also giving other people the idea that actually continuous improvement, working out how you're going to keep things going, not just launch something new and whizzy, is also important as well.
In smaller charities, I'd say you end up with the people who end up being accidental techies, you know, people who have a bit of knowledge and get to help everybody in the organisation. And that can be good and bad. And I think, you know, if you're recruiting volunteers, as small charities often do for technical roles, if it's a project, fine, but if it's a long-term strategic thing, you need to get the money to pay for it, and you need to persuade your funders that this is essential to the lifeblood of the organisation. And I would say don't go ahead without a budget for that.
Yeah, we still have a relatively tribal digital versus IT vibe, but the way that we sort of make the distinction is that if your computer's not working, speak to IT. For most other things, speak to the digital team. But we are increasingly becoming more aligned in terms of, because originally we only really cared about consumer-facing tech, but the more that we think about, you know, from the consumer making a donation to a grant being made and the beneficiary receiving the impact, like, technology is being used throughout, and if you aren't using sort of digital principles throughout that entire sort of chain, you're going to have massive bottlenecks, massive inefficiencies in the middle, which ultimately impacts on the level of impact you can make. So, yeah, we are probably striving to become more like you guys, but at the moment there's still a bit of, like, tribal nature. Yeah.
Right, we've got a question come through the app from Dan. Are there tactics or tips that can help charities persuade or work with their boards to begin to identify the digital strategy?
Well, apart from sack them all, which someone mentioned earlier, definitely the Digital Advisory Board, I think, for me, was the absolute turning point at Age UK.
I think the Charity Digital Skills survey that's on at the moment, I hope will help lots of charities identify where they are and where they need to be. There's governance, there's loads of digital maturity frameworks that people can have a look at.
The NCVO one.
And others. So, yeah, I think it's kind of worth looking into those kind of things.
I just think if your charity doesn't have clear objectives overall, then there's no point in having a digital strategy. So for us, we found it very easy to file in under, we've now got four core objectives. One of them's around cost savings, which technology can then really be used, like you can just automatically link it up. So actually, if we automate that process, here's how many man days we're going to save. Yes, it will cost us 20 man days to do, but over the next 2 years, you're going to save 60 man days or whatever, then so it's worthwhile. And I think the tip that I would say is probably go in with your audience. So if you've got a financially driven board, then go in with cost savings. If you've got you want something shiny and new board, then probably don't go for, like, here's how we could automate that. That's not sexy to them. So go for, you know, maybe more of the, here's, like, more of the social and digital, that side of things, to say, okay, if you want that to be impactful, we need to be maybe tracking it and stuff. So it's about understanding your audience, definitely. So we have a very different conversation with our treasurer about digital than we have with, like, Richard Curtis, who's one of our trustees. He does not care about automation, but he likes things that can, like, are cool. So, you know your board.
So, interesting question coming from Eve. Any advice on how to stay grounded in your digital strategy and stay people-centred, especially for small charities where service users may not have the means to engage digitally? Pauline, any thoughts on that?
Join the Small Charities Coalition for a start. Be around other people who are going through the same issues as you are. One of the things that we're launching now is a cyber security skill. Can I read this out? Because I got a note from this morning. We are launching a new partnership with NCC Group around cyber resilience training for charities, and I think that's relevant to all charities. And we're equally vulnerable to cyber attacks. And I think for small charities, losing any amount of money would be more of a disaster than for others. But we're launching this training with the first half-day session and then mentor support after that on the 26th of March in Edinburgh. And I think doing something like that, where it can be shown to be immediately practical, safeguarding what you've got, I think most charities can see the point of that. So I would recommend that as something to do.
I think definitely keep talking to other people that are in a similar state, whether you're a small, medium, large charity. I've found that so amazingly helpful over 10 years, because it can feel really difficult sometimes and really lonely, whatever stage you're at, and just going and having a coffee with someone who's going through exactly the same, you know, we had that with the bingo earlier, but just talking to someone else and them going, oh, well, I've tried this and this worked, and, you know, you get a few ideas. For me, that is one way to just keep you focused, and keep you kind of not getting depressed sometimes about how difficult it is.
There's a really good Slack space called Digital Charity, if you're not in it already, and they, you know, they're constantly sharing information about what works and what helps, and going to events and going to recommending tips and tricks and equipment and stuff like that. So that's really helpful. Reading Charity Digital News again is very good. It's just kind of getting into the mindset there are resources out there, and tapping into those resources.
And just kind of a real short one on just celebrating the 20%, because I think a lot of the time, so that question was around. How do you stay grounded? It's like, if you make a 20%, so if you're at zero and you get to 20%, that's actually huge. And so we've just come out of a 2-day sprint thing where I was like, oh God, it's so, in my mind, it's so easy for us to get to at least 80, and we've got to 20%. And you're like, actually, that is better than nothing. And I think that really feeds into the entire premise of being more digital. It's not, there is no 100% digital. It's just, it's all about incremental and continuous improvement. Yeah. So you're never going to be done, which is also quite dissatisfying, but you can always be getting that 20% each time.
So I'm conscious we're actually out of time, and I apologise for the questions we didn't get through to. There's a couple on the app. If the people who've got those want to try and catch us afterwards, I'm sure people will be happy to chat overall. It's obviously a huge topic area, digital strategy overall, it's one I feel very passionately about. I've worked in it a lot myself over many, many years. We are carrying a lot of content on it now within Charity Digital. So we've done a couple of podcasts, we've got written articles, we've done an e-guide as well, and there will be a lot more as well. So I do encourage you to stay engaged with us to actually benefit from that as we go forward as well. But I'd like to thank the panel for all their time and their insights today.